Hello, this is Kevin Barrett of TruthJihad.com. Unfortunately, my website, TruthJihad.com, has been disabled. It's under attack by some fairly sophisticated cyber hackers. We're trying to deal with this right now, but unfortunately, you can't join at TruthJihad.com because the site is down. However, if you want to help out and maybe help me try to get the site back up, because I may have to hire some pretty expensive help here, you can kick in something by PayPaling me by way of truthjihad@gmail.com. That's my email address that I use for the PayPal, truthjihad@gmail.com. Or you could always send something through the U.S. Postal Service to P.O. Box 221, Lone Rock, Wisconsin, 53556. Thank you. Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. This is Kevin Barrett doing the Truth Jihad. It's an all-out struggle for truth, disguised as a radio show. I bring on 4, 5, 6 great guests every week, telling it like it is. And today, one of my favorite regular guests, somebody who's probably been on this show just about as much as anybody, if not more, is rejoining us to talk about the recent events over in Brussels, Belgium, and that would be Ole Damegaard. Ole is one of the go-to guys when discussing any kind of false flag terror in Europe. He's at lightonconspiracies.com, one of the great websites out there. He's cut his teeth on looking into assassinations, including the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olaf Palm. And since then, he's really peeled back the onion layers and looked under the rock to see what's crawling around under the national security states. Well, Ole, welcome to Truth Jihad Radio.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I wish I wasn't such a regular guest, I must say.
No, every time they kill a bunch of people in Europe, I have to call you up. I kind of wish they would stop.
Exactly, me too. But here we go.
Yeah. So you were right there with a very interesting early piece of information about this Brussels thing, which is, you know, you've looked into the aspect of the sort of esoteric and occult beliefs of the perpetrators of these events, these kinds of events anyway, and you had already written about the satanic heart smeared in blood on the floor of the Bataclan Theater during the 11-13-15 Paris false flag. You wrote about that in the book Another French False Flag, which I edited. And here you found that the logo for the Brussels airport, you can't make this stuff up, looks just like one of those smeared satanic blood hearts. I mean, that's probably not what they want the travelers to notice, but that's what it looks like. It's crazy.
It is absolutely unreal. When I studied, I mean, I've been really studying these photos from the Bataclan and the other Paris attacks very, very in great detail. And I wasn't really able to make it a heart. It looked like a heart shape, but it wasn't really. And at the same time, it looked like a heart. I mean, I was just looking over and over and over of it. And then I saw today when this happened, there was a Finnish TV thing coming up. And one of the images from the airport was that exact logo from the airport. And then it says there was the logo exactly like this heart shape, like a mix between a heart and a seagull, you know, the freedom bird type of logo. And then it said Brussels, the heart of Europe. And boom, that was it. It was exactly the same pattern as was smeared in blood in the Bataclan Theater. And it is just like you say, you can't make these things up, because if you really compare and take this to your heart, then it's so obvious that this thing that happened in Brussels now must have been planned way before November. And that just once again adds to my theory that so many of these are totally connected. It's the same gang doing it again and again and again and again.
So really the logo should be Brussels, the bloody heart of Europe, because that's, you know, Brussels is the center of NATO, and that's, so it was the epicenter of the first wave of Gladio false flags during the Cold War. Those were all run out of NATO headquarters, we now know. And now we're apparently in the midst of a Gladio B program targeting Muslims, blaming these events on Muslims, just like they were blamed on leftists during the Cold War. Presumably, it's still coming out of NATO, which is right there in Brussels, 2 miles away from these attacks. Mm-hmm. And Brussels is also supposedly the center of the elite pedophile world. And we've, you know, that's been surfacing in the UK with the Jimmy Savile scandal. But there was a couple of earlier such scandals in Brussels, and it seems like the globalist elite that's behind so many of these things does terrible things to children, and that their crime ring is headquartered right there in Brussels. So I guess it's the bloody heart of Europe in a number of ways.
It is when you study what's going on there. I'm not pointing at normal people, but my God, behind closed doors and in the dark corridors of so-called power, very, very weird and tragic, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of good people in Brussels. I know some of them. Shout out to Eric Beef, a wonderful doctor in Brussels who works very hard taking care of people, including the Moroccan immigrants there who've had more health problems in general than some of the other locals. Eric's a good 9/11 truth activist, one of the most eloquent voices from Europe, a very, very good guy. I stayed with him in Brussels at one point. And in fact, we were even talking about the possibility of me moving there and setting up a bookshop, a kind of an alternative bookshop in Brussels. I like Brussels. I got to see a little bit of it during my couple of visits there. And I've been through there lots of times on the way to Morocco. For years and years and years, every time I went to Morocco, I was routed through Brussels. And so I've been through that airport zillions of times. I've been through that train station zillions of times. You take the train from the airport right down into Brussels. It's very convenient. And I hate to see this kind of stuff happen, and it turns people against each other. There's all kinds of suffering, of course, for the people hurt and killed and their families. And then the whole atmosphere becomes kind of, you know, polluted with evil, fear, paranoia, distrust, suspicion. The surveillance state comes rushing in to crack down. And, you know, and that's probably a lot of the purpose of this. I mean, this is, looks like it's another of these steps towards the New World Order total surveillance state, where people are going to have to give up any kind of freedom, solidarity with their fellow human beings, and live isolated and in fear under the watchful eye in the pyramid. Sorry, Oli, we've lost your sound. I can't hear you right now. I can see you, but I can't hear you. I hope it's not me.
Can you?
Oh, now I hear you. Yeah, now you're there.
Okay. No, I'm very sorry to say, but I think you're spot on. And it's what people don't see are all these personal tragedies around these events. You know, all of these people that are being treated badly and with suspicion just because the hair color or skin color and so on, when actually the ones that should be treated with suspicion and badly treated are the people we have put in power positions that are doing this to us. So we really need to understand what's going on, because either we are in a totally crazy world filled with mad Muslims that wake up for breakfast, have cereals, and try to figure out new ways of blowing us to smithereens, or we're looking at what I would call the so-called New World Order, a power structure where these kind of horror acts are state-sponsored terrorism there to scare us into obedience and to beg for more and more protection and welcome their very, very dark agenda. So it's the options are very, very different depending on what we believe to be true. And this is why I think both you and I are putting ourselves on the line to make people become aware of what's going on. Because this is serious, very serious.
Well, there is a religious dimension to all of this. And, of course, that's been exaggerated in the mainstream narrative. They tell us that it's Islamic extremism that's behind it. And then the same kind of people often say that, well, religion in general is what turns people against each other and so on. Of course, that's historically not true, as Karen Armstrong's latest book explains in great detail with the statistics to back it up. But the religious dimension is quite different from what the mainstream tells us. And that is that it appears that there is sort of a group, or maybe a cluster of groups, of esoteric, satanic, Freemasonic cultists who are involved in these things. They're the ones who are into things like blood hearts. They're into things like dates with 11s in them, 9/11 being a prime example, 11/22 with 22 being the multiple of 11 being the Kennedy assassination day. I believe 3/11 was Madrid, the Madrid terror attacks that followed 9/11 exactly 911 days after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And now here we have these new attacks in Brussels, Belgium, the heart of the pedophile, satanic NATO Operation Gladio Mafia, just 2 miles away from NATO headquarters, happening on 3/22, March 22nd. This is a huge satanic holiday, apparently. I had to look this up because I'm not much of a follower of satanic holidays, but it's quite amazing that this is apparently observed by Satanists, this 3/22 thing. It's the holiday, what's it called? It's called, I have to quickly look this up. It's the day that they worship Isis, of all things. It's the culmination of the 3-day satanic feast of Pelusia, which consists of the invocation of Isis. And of course, that means Isis the goddess, supposedly, not Isis the terrorist group, but it kind of does telescope together. And they also pay homage to Ishtar on this day. And Ishtar is apparently considered to be related with this territory where she was worshipped in Upper Mesopotamia. That is modern northern Iraq, northeastern Syria, and southeastern Turkey. Exactly the same places where ISIS, the terrorist group, today rules. Do you have to be a crazy coincidence theorist not to notice this stuff, Ole?
I don't know, but what do you say about the second bomb that went off today, this morning, at 09:11?
Really? 09/11 was the time? I missed that one.
Yeah, and also the security company at the Belgium airport, as far as I know, is the Israeli company ICTS, which is the same company for surveillance as far as I know, as 9/11, the airports there, the London 7/7 bombings there, in Fukushima, the BP oil platform, the Madrid train stations, and so on. So, and also, do you know the CCTV footage that we've been shown? It's actually, if I'm correct, it is actually from Russia from 2011, from an explosion at an airport there. So, and also, you know, when you have this, the footage from inside, there are still photos from inside the airport, and we were talking about Freemasonic symbols and so on. And if you look at the I don't know what it is. I mean, it looks like it's tiles from the roof that has been falling down, but they're falling. They are like in a chessboard pattern, black and white, but all messed up, just like a Freemasonic floor or the pattern they have, this black and white checkerboard. Mm-hmm. There's also a very, very strong statue in the middle of this hall where the bomb went off that I haven't been able to trace yet what it's about, but I would not be surprised if it was a Freemasonic symbol, that the image of this statue has something to do with Freemasonry. Also, there's another still photo where people are running out and they're running towards the exit gate 3-3. These things are just there's so many of them.
There's also some 11.
Yeah, and there's also where there's live footage of this black and white checkerboard area at the airport where it said that the bomb went off. There's some live footage, but you do not see any faces of any people. You just see this black and white, and then all the rest of the colors are red and blue, which are the exact same blue and red that are used in the news, depending on what mood they want us to in. The blue to get serious and the red to get emotional. And the only colors except for the black and white are blue and red, very strong blue and red colors on clothes or bags. So maybe just a coincidence, but you know, when you look at these things, there is not that many coincidences, I would say.
Wow. So you mentioned ICTS, the Israeli security company that ran the airports used on 9/11. I believe they were also there at the Amsterdam airport when these underwear bomber was escorted onto the plane by a well-dressed man, according to the eyewitness passenger Kurt Haskell, who's now living in exile out of the United States after he tried to expose that. He even went to the trial of the underwear bomber and tried to expose that. But yeah, this ICTS sounds like a heck of a security company. I wouldn't hire them to guard anything of mine, that's for sure.
I mean, when you and I mess up, you know, we get fired or so, but these people, the more they mess up, apparently, the more they get hired. You know, the more of these horror events that happens, the more they just spread out. Go figure.
So the agenda here is fairly obvious at certain levels. It's obviously part of this move to keep the so-called war on terror going, to keep the terror meme alive, to terrorize people into giving up their freedoms, and to terrorize people into being stampeded towards this surveillance state, New World Order, kind of a global police state built on the foundation of Islamophobia. All that's pretty obvious. And do you think that they might also be trying to push Europe and the U.S. further into Syria to take advantage of Russia's withdrawal, to maybe try to get some boots on the ground or to escalate over in Syria?
I'm not the right person to ask about that. I'm more on a sort of a street level looking into things. I can only speculate on these bigger matters.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, getting back to that sort of Freemasonic satanic element here, isn't that interesting how they're not really trying to hide it? It's almost as if there are these sorts of signatures that appear with these events. Like with 9/11, they go after Twin Towers, and the Twin Towers of Joachim and Boaz are the two biggest symbols of Freemasonry. And then they also hit the Pentagon, and the pentagram is the other biggest symbol of Freemasonry. In the Bataclan, they smear a big satanic heart in blood on the floor. It can't have gotten there naturally in any normal way. It's like they're tagging their work like a graffiti artist who's actually proud of what they're doing. And here in Brussels, it looks like we have some of the same phenomena.
It is the same happening again and again. Do you know, I've just uncovered a thing that I had no idea about. It was in 1992, I think. There was a tram accident or catastrophe in Sweden, where a tram was from the absolute highest point in Gothenburg suddenly was let loose. There was like two long carriages with double tram wagons, or whatever you want to call it, that was let down the steepest hill in Gothenburg. So it came up to almost 100 kilometers an hour, and then it slammed right into a tram stop where a lot of people were gathered, and I think about 13 people were killed there, a big trauma in Sweden. But when you look at it, I've been really looking into it now, and exactly where these people died, if you look on Google Map, it's a pyramid-shaped park, and in the top of the pyramid is an obelisk. So, and this is standard at these things. At the Queensday massacre in Holland, it was identical. If you look Google Map, the streets, perfect pyramid shape, where even the top of the pyramid is cut off with one street, and then at the exact top of the pyramid is an obelisk, and that is where the man that went crazy, they say, and smashed his way through the crowd in a car, trying to hit the bus where the Dutch queen was on board. Instead, he missed the bus and he went straight and crashed into the obelisk. And then they have had where this tram was started going totally wild down this hill. You have to manually let go of the brakes in six different positions on the tram. So it's absolutely impossible to do it without, more or less, on purpose. And then when you're there in obelisk, they even put, like, there's a sculpture with a cross and then a massive big needle. And the name of this sculpture is Here. So Here, it looks like one of these needles you put on a map. They mark the exact point where the tram was let go of, and then boom, exactly where the people were sacrificed, almost like as an altar. And it's just, it's this horrific thing that is behind it. The subtones underneath these attacks is very, very gruesome.
Yes, indeed. And that does, you know, seems to be part of the MO here, is that they're terrorizing ordinary people at two levels. First with the violence and horror of the actual attacks, and then they leave these kinds of clues, you know, including these really, you know, sick, you know, satanic, spooky type clues, in order to essentially make people even more afraid. Like at the unconscious level, I think for a lot of people, they kind of see this stuff and, oh no, can't go there, you know, conspiracy theory. A lot of people are terrified of even thinking about these things. And so by putting these clues out in the open, I think that actually makes people even more afraid.
Yeah. Do you know when the tram slammed into this this crowd of people killing these 13? Do you know what time?
No, I don't.
09:11 in the morning.
09:11.
Yeah. Wow. And the numbers of the trams were 77.
Really?
You know, like this. Yeah, these numbers keep repeating again and again and again and again. So this is either the chances of coincidences are just astronomical, or we're looking at a very clear pattern here.
And this 322 seems to fit into the numerology, doesn't it?
Is
the square root of 9, of course. And 22 is a double 11. It's not a terribly surprising day, especially when you learn that it's this big satanic holiday. We almost could have predicted this. And you have predicted a number of these false flag events. Did you see this one coming?
I've been tired lately, Kevin. Had I been alert, I would have seen it coming, but I was not there. I've been so focused on so many things, so... I will try to be more sharp in the future.
Well, you know, we can't expect you to predict every major false flag, Ole. You have a pretty good track record. But yeah, this one, I didn't see it coming either, really. I wonder also to what extent this is partly a part of a plan, as I wrote about in my article, to slow the, what do we call it, the Islamic Renaissance, the rise of Islam, especially in the West. I think that I know at least the hardline Zionists are terrified of the power of Muslim voters, who already outnumber Jewish voters in European countries by quite a lot, and even in the U.S. by a little bit. It was actually the Muslim voting bloc that delivered the 2000 presidential election to Bush and Cheney on the false pretenses from Bush and Cheney that they were going to end the persecution of Muslims. And, of course, that effort was led by a strong pro-Palestinian activist, Dr. Samuel Arian, who was later essentially witch-hunted and became a bit of a human sacrifice himself, spent a decade in prison, I think, trying to defend himself from these ludicrous charges. They got him convicted in a courtroom by playing pictures or playing videos of suicide bomber victims in Palestine and just implying, with no evidence whatsoever, that Samuel Arian was responsible for that. Anyway, they were obviously... very upset that Muslims were able to deliver the presidential election in 2000, and the rise of Muslim political power would mean the demise of Zionist political power in the medium term in the U.S., and probably even faster in Europe, where Muslims are a rising demographic. And if you read that book that was published on January 7th, the same day as the Charlie Hebdo attack a little over a year ago, it's the book called Soumission, which portrays a Europe that's fallen to the Muslims in like 2022, I think it is. And in this book, Soumission, the way that it's envisaged that Europe's going to fall to the Muslims is through Muslim voting power, that the Muslim bloc is able, which by then is supposedly up to like 20% of the population, is able to unite with another bloc to determine which government forms. And once they do that, they're able to get hold of the education ministry and turn the French schools into Muslim schools. And it's kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, I think it's portraying the real fear of the Zionist elite, which is the real reason they're afraid of Islam isn't terrorism or anything like that. It's that Muslims are going to change Western policies and turn them away from Zionism. And also, Muslims are very opposed to usury, so they're going to change the currency systems as soon as they have the power to do so and put an end to the misrule of the central bankers. So I wrote in my article that this, I think, is one of the motives here. And then, of course, there's also just the hatred of God on the part. I mean, that's what Satanism is all about, is the hatred of God. And the Muslims are bowing down to God five times a day. They're the people who are most attached to God in the modern world. So this is part of my analysis of why they've got this war on Islam going and why they're stoking it with these false flags. How much of that would you tend to agree with?
It sounds very probable. I mean, it sounds very logical what you're saying. I just want to point out that regarding me not foreseeing this, that is not really true, because about a week ago, there was the biggest drill in the history of Europe, where there was four countries participating in a massive big drill. There was more than 1,000 extras, crisis actors. There was, I think, 72 different agencies from four different countries. What countries, I'm not sure of, but I bet you we have France, England, I would say Belgium, and maybe Turkey or Denmark, that these would be the countries that would be there, because these are the players at the moment here. And one of the things they did there was they had, they were training on a... the scenario was that there was a train that had crashed in Waterloo Station. But the thing was that they used an old power station in England, and they built a replica of the whole Waterloo Station where they did all of these things and took loads and loads of photos, extremely realistic photos of people dead and hurt and crashed and whatever, and all the train wagons and all of these things. So we have been, I've been pumping out on Facebook and so on, please, please be aware of that this could very well be the training and practicing for upcoming events, that they're pushing, that they're beating up the tempo again and getting the pressure up for something major. And then England came out and said that they were expecting multiple terror attacks. I mean, they always know beforehand, it seems. And then, boom, this happened instead. So I don't think anyone, I was not prepared for Brussels. I was more looking at England. But for sure, something was incoming.
Well, those terror drills in England were really over the top, as you said. They went all out simulating these disastrous attacks on a train station, which might have led some people to want to avoid European trains. I think Prime Minister, or rather, Turkish President Erdogan did predict an attack in Brussels about 4 days ago, I think it was, and that's being spread around now as though, you know, he's in on it. I don't know, but who knows? I mean, he's part of NATO, and from his behavior in Syria, you just don't really know who he's really serving. He called out the Charlie Hebdo false flag, though. He said it was a false flag attack. He was the first head of state, in fact, the only head of state that ever really called that one out. So it's hard to tell with these kinds of things. But it is interesting that I think it was 4 days ago that he said after the blast in Ankara, there's been a couple of these attacks in Ankara, Turkey, the capital of Turkey. He said, well, it could happen. It could happen next in Brussels. And then 4 days later, it does.
Yeah. I tell you, when I speak to Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower, who's been very much involved in operations, false flag operations and other type of black ops and so on, he often talks about that when they carried these things out, they were very often working with people from Denmark, from Turkey and England and France. These are the countries I know that he's mentioned. So, and Turkey was among them. So it seems like there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes with these type of operations that we are not aware of.
And yes, Turkey is very much a hotbed of Gladio. In fact, yeah, the number of people killed in Turkey during Operation Gladio was vastly higher than the number of people killed in all of the rest of the European countries put together. And they use Turks in all sorts of operations, the Grey Wolves. The heroin smuggling through Turkey is a big part of financing Gladio, as both Richard Cottrell and Paul Williams. And Paul Williams' book is really very much worth reading. It's extremely readable. I think it's just called Operation Gladio. So, yeah, we have this documented now that it's these criminal terror networks, which appear to be linked to Freemasonry and Satanism, that are behind all of these terror attacks that they blame on others. And yet the mainstream is just going to go along with the cover story. It's the radical Muslims and people like Donald Trump, who questions certain aspects of the official wisdom, is doubling down on this and saying we got to persecute the Muslims even more now. So who knows where it's all going to end. Well, we've come to the end of the half hour anyway. That's where the half hour is going to end. But, you know, thank you, Ole. Your website is lightonconspiracies.com. Anything else to add there?
I would very much like to ask for donations or buy my books or something like that to get me in a position where I can go on location, for instance, to Brussels and expose it while the operation is ongoing, and so that I can get there fast before all the evidence disappears and so on, and expose this, because we need to stop these operations. It's getting totally out of hand. But I can't do it on my own. So I, please, if anyone feels the urge of supporting me in that aspect, please go to my website, lightonconspiracies.com. There's newsletter, membership, whatever. And I will do my absolute utmost to continue this battle. I mean, it really feels like a battle at the moment.
Okay, well, I would highly recommend that people do go to lightonconspiracies.com and donate to Ole's False Flag Frequent Flyer Fund. We need something like that. We need you, Ole. All right. Well, hey, thanks for all your great work. Keep it up, and I look forward to talking to you again, hopefully not after a big slaughter.
No, let's speak on more gentle terms, you know, like normal things. But until this stops, we just have to do it.
Somebody's got it. It's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. And I appreciate what you've put into this over the years. Thank you, Ole Tellinger.
Thank you,
God
bless Kevin. You.
Bye-bye. Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio, the all-out struggle for truth disguised as a radio show. I'm Kevin Barrett, pursuing education by other means since I was driven out of the University of Wisconsin by politicians back in 2006. And I have a guest today who is quite aware and highly educated in a range of humanistic endeavors, somewhat parallel to mine, you know, different details, but it's the same thing. We're both kind of humanities guys. Israel Shamir is one of the leading outside-the-box thinkers hailing sort of from the Middle East, although he's been lately engaged in thinking about what's really going on with Europe, the conflict with Russia, and so on. He's been involved in the WikiLeaks affair, all sorts of interesting things. His background is actually too interesting for me to concisely summarize. So his latest article is about the blessed bigotry of Mr. Trump. It is a wonderful counter-narrative of the Trump bigotry question. So without further ado, welcome, Israel Shamir. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. It's a great pleasure to be again with you, Kevin, and with your listeners.
Yes, well, I've appreciated your work for a long time. You were one of the early endorsers of the Muslim-Jewish Alliance for 9/11 Truth, and all of the propagandists came out of the woodwork denouncing me for having any association with you.
that's unavoidable, you know. Whatever we say, we shall always be damned by somebody.
That's right.
By bigots again, you know, by bigots of sorts.
Yes, well, the world is crawling with all sorts of bigots, but, you know, the way things are portrayed in the mainstream, you know, you would think that it's actually people who cling to any kind of religious or national or ethnic identity and who are keeping the old ways alive. Those are the bigots, whereas the New World Order, homogenized Mick World inhabitants are supposedly the enlightened folks, the wave of the future. But you don't seem to agree with that.
Yeah, well, for me, this word always is so much a dated word. Indeed, if you look through the books of 19th century, you will see that the word bigot was not some specially bad word. It was something that you would say about old colonel with very settled ideas about how things should be done. He would be called a bigot, but it was not a very, very bad thing to say about anybody. You know, some kind of normal bigotry would be normal thing. And only with the victory, with access of this new world order, now bigotry became the worst thing a man can do or a man can feel. So it is one of those thought crimes which are being so vividly persecuted actually in our world. For me, it means very, very little. You know, when I was a boy, a young man, I was also indoctrinated like everybody that if somebody refers to you as a Jew, I should immediately begin to feel upset, insulted, worried, troubled. But then with years, I thought, well, what's so special? I have no special difficulty to refer to a Belgian as a Belgian, to refer to a French as a French, to an Englishman like an Englishman. So why kind of Jews are should be so special? What's wrong with refer to a Jew as a Jew? And eventually I came to conclusion that maybe all those things became kind of too hysterical, that this no-naming became too much of a thing. Like, why can't we refer to a blackness of a black, to Jewishness of a Jew, to Islamism of a Muslim? All those things are actually quite normal. And from this point of view, the East is very different from Europe because people always live together. And it's kind of normal in the great city of Jerusalem. You see there are Muslims and Christians and Jews and whoever else live more or less together until recently, actually quite peacefully now, not anymore. But people got used to refer to the other people, and people do actually think, people are full of prejudices. That's normal. There's nothing especially bad about it, because that's in a way, like in this way, we are being taught what to expect from a person. And if you know what to expect, then maybe you will become more cautious and wouldn't do something that would cause trouble to you or to somebody else.
Interesting. You know, we do hear this analysis from the partisans of the New World Order that it's people's identities, and especially their religious identities, that are responsible for all the bloodshed in the world. And of course, that's far from true. There's been a lot more bloodshed ever since people started dropping their religious identities. And people who doubt that should read Karen Armstrong's book on, what's it called, Fields of Blood or something like that. It's her recent book, which debunks this notion that religions are responsible for all the bloodshed in the world. And
absolutely true. Absolutely true. I fully agree with you. Just think about World War II, one of the biggest bloodsheds in the history of mankind, and nobody had any religious identity at all. They were all irreligious, all quite godless, and killed each other even faster.
Exactly, right. So this notion of bigotry is interesting, and I agree. The word has this kind of checkered history, a little bit like anti-Semitism. It's a word that started in a particular context a long time ago. The context doesn't exist anymore, and the word has sort of been twisted to turn into a mindless, negative epithet, a kind of pejorative attack word that, without very much content. I personally prefer the word prejudice, which means prejudging. If I meet you and you're Jewish, and my first thought is, oh, this guy is some kind of, you know, evil, you know, Rothschild, blood-sucking this or that, you know, that's a kind of a negative impression that comes before I've even met you. That would be a bad kind of prejudice or prejudging. On the other hand, there's reasonable prejudging too, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely reasonable. Yeah, one should be cautious with it, not because you are going to upset somebody, that doesn't matter too much, but because you are likely to make a mistake yourself. In Flaubert's beautiful novel, Madame Bovary, there is a very, very funny story inside of it. It's about Madame Bovary, who is being taken, misused by a person who gives her some money under very high percent that she should repay back. And this person tells her all the time, well, I'm not a Jew, you have nothing to be afraid. and he takes her to her ruin very fast. So that's a bit, that's this sort of problem. Prejudice, yes, if she would encounter a Jew, probably she would be more cautious, because everybody knows that Jews are likely to shave you very closely. But again, you know, non-Jews can also do it. So that sort of things. I don't find that this sort of prejudice is very bad. It's uncomfortable, yes, if you are, let's say, a person that other people are prejudiced against. But again, then it is a small challenge for you to behave better. And then it, you wouldn't be called by such and such name, you know. So I think it's perfectly all right. It's actually a challenge, which, and every challenge is actually good for you.
Well, you're, in your article, The Blessed Bigotry of Mr. Trump, which I highly recommend, it's a good provocative piece. I think that you have a couple of very good points. This article was actually forwarded to me by a friend in Iran who is a partisan of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. He's not particularly fond of the Iranian gusanos who fled that revolution to live in luxury in Los Angeles and endlessly carp about the situation in their homeland. So he related to your suggestion that maybe the world's Muslims should actually be happy if Trump were to lock them out of the United States. But again, I think that prejudice, the notion of prejudice, does apply to Trump in that there's no real link between Islam and all of these false flag attacks designed to be blamed on Muslims that have created this war on Islam. And by judging Islam and Muslims as having something to do with this situation, I would argue that Trump is indeed indulging in the wrong kind of prejudice, rushing to a false judgment.
Yeah, probably. You know, it's a complicated question. Now, the world of Islam suffers so much from being bombed, from being attacked, that it's very difficult for us even to think what it was 150 years ago before the Europeans began to bomb it and colonize it and kill and maim and murder and whatnot. So that's also what we see is a result of so many years of colonization and of troubles. Look, for instance, Libya. Now it's 5 years since Libya was attacked by the United States and by Europeans who bombed it and killed, I don't know, one hears all kind of numbers, up to 100,000 people being killed by European attack. And obviously, such things do not pass without some consequences. And then to say, well, Muslims are wild and they are killing everybody, and to take out of consideration what caused them to behave in such a way. And now we don't have to really decide whether they do it or they don't, but for sure, because for sure sometimes they do. Sometimes they feel themselves pushed. In my view, it's also a question of reaction on extreme provocation that they have been subjected to.
Yeah, I think that's true in some cases, but I think that we do have to keep in mind the Sun Tzu art of war analysis of things, that everything in a struggle is designed to get your opponent to surrender, stop fighting, or do what you want them to do. And if we analyze this struggle between the Western colonialism, imperialism against the Islamic world, and the pushback from that perspective, what we see is that there are a number of these so-called, you know, terrorist events and various forms of military resistance, including unorthodox military resistance, asymmetrical warfare, which makes sense. And it certainly makes sense to attribute those to the resistance fighters who are using those techniques. But there are also these, I would argue in particular, these really big, spectacular events in Western countries, which, as I see it, were set up with the false flags that led up to 9/11 to make al-Qaeda a plausible patsy. Then the 9/11 television spectacular itself, which is essentially a Hollywood film, was scripted and storyboarded long in advance precisely for the emotional effect it would have when people saw the disaster footage of people eating clouds, chasing people down the streets of New York, 3,000 people dead. The shock effect there was designed, obviously, to create a basically an endless war on Islam. And this is not what you would want to do if you were a Muslim resistance fighter. In fact, in some ways, I think of myself as a Muslim resistance fighter. I just prefer to do it with words rather than we other weapons. And therefore, I think it's very important, to straighten out this, this playing field and say, okay, yeah, sure, there's legitimate resistance, there's real resistance. And occasionally, it may be where somebody is pushed too far and they act emotionally and stupidly. But these big events, these big spectacular events designed to put the West at war with Islam are obviously created by the other side because they're the ones who benefit. They're the ones with the means, motive, and opportunity.
Well, maybe and maybe not. It's very difficult to decide about it in such kind of decisive way. Many years passed since 2001, and nobody actually stepped forward and said, "Yes, I was hired to put charges," or "I was hired to turn the plane other way around." We
No,
don't.
we actually do have some confessions.
Really, I am not aware of it.
Yeah, just let me give you a couple of quick ones. Susan Lindauer, a CIA asset, and her CIA case officer, Dr. Richard Fuse, were aware that there would be a spectacular attack in Lower Manhattan at the end of August or beginning of September. And as they watched the attack on television, watched the towers exploding, Fuse started screaming, "The goddamn Israelis, the goddamn Israelis." That's one example. So Lindauer was held incommunicado in a military base for a year, but now she's out and alive and telling her story. There are many, many other examples. Francis X. Taylor, Colin Powell's right-hand man, expressed his foreknowledge that planes would hit the Twin Towers and the World Trade Center would be completely destroyed. He had that foreknowledge in August of 2001, as per his documented phone conversation with Randy Glass. These are just a few of the many, many examples.
People did have a foreknowledge, there's no doubt about that. But what I mean that none of them gave us an information now saying that, let's say, President Bush sent us or whatever. All those things are still very obscure. And I mean, it doesn't matter all that very much. I understand that for Americans, it's some kind of, the most important event. But for people who live outside America, well, you say 3,000 people dead. That's what Israel kills in Gaza every year. So maybe we are not all that shocked. Or if we speak about Syria, that's what people in Syria are being killed every week. And this business of 9/11 is something kind of very American that for non-Americans it's difficult to understand.
It's part of a global war on Islam and all of these other false flags, like the Paris events last year, the Belgium event today, the event in Copenhagen, the follow-up to the Paris event, Madrid, Bali, 7/7 in London. All of these have been thoroughly documented to be false flags. They're not part of Operation Gladio B.
Perhaps the real trouble that I see it, if we refer to Islam nowadays, that is that the enemy succeeded to create some special breed, what they call takfirism, takfiris, they are called in the Middle East. That's the people who consider themselves being proper Muslims, while everybody else is non-Muslim and should be killed. Such extremists, like we see them in some places, they are obviously, it's kind of very sad that so many good young people were indoctrinated in such fanatic beliefs. And that's obviously a big problem in Syria. That's something that we encounter very much. And in other places too. That Islam, obviously, like every religion or like every belief, can bring people to extreme or can bring people to God. That depends which way you are going.
Well, that's a valid point, and I agree that the Takfiri phenomenon has become a genuine problem, mainly for the Muslims of the Middle East, who are, 99% of the victims of the Takfiris are Muslims of the Middle East.
Oh yes, Jews never suffer from it. There is a—I don't know whether you watched sometimes. There is a very funny short video made by Palestinians showing how Daesh is operating. That they stop a Muslim and they say, "How often do you pray?" Oh, he says, kind of 5 times a day. "And how often do you pronounce this and this a part of the Quran, and he says three times, and they shoot him on the spot. They say, you should do it five times more or whatever. And then an Israeli passes by and they say, well, who are you? I am an Israeli. Oh, they say, well, pass by our dear sir. We don't interfere with you. So that's basically true. Yes, they kill Muslims and they very rarely kill anybody else. So that is some sort of inner sickness that the enemy succeeded to introduce into the body of Islam. That's something very, very new. I mean, when we were younger, it didn't exist. Nowadays, alas, it exists, and that's obviously a big problem for the Muslim world.
And indeed, if Donald Trump were to say, we need to keep Takfiris out of the United States, we want to join the Muslim world in its war on Takfiris or something like that, find a way to end this phenomenon, probably that would not be a problem for most of the world's Muslims. But then when he says, we've got to lock out all the Muslims because of this, a lot of Muslims do have a problem with that.
Kevin, best of all, let him keep everybody out of the United States, and let everybody keep the Americans out of their countries. That would be probably the best solution. You know, I just can't imagine how wonderful the world would be if Mrs. Nuland would never visit Ukraine. We would have much, much happier world if there would be no Americans coming to bomb Libya. You know, Libya will enjoy it. So, actually, less interaction with the United States would be very good for everybody concerned. If, as far as I understand, Trump, meanwhile, appears as a sort of isolationist. And isolationist is the best thing that us foreigners can wish for American president. The best thing for an American president that we would all like to have is a person who would completely forget that there is a world outside of the United States. If he would be unaware of our existence, that would be even better. And I think that Trump is almost very close to this perfection.
And that's kind of the point that you make in this article, that and not only would the people of the world be better off if Americans were not descending upon them or forcing they're making their bombs descend on them, but also they would be better off if their people weren't coming to the United States. The brain drain on these countries, not just Islamic countries, but many other countries as well, is a huge problem. I know this from Morocco. You know, my wife is part of the brain drain. She scored top score on the English language test in Morocco and got a scholarship to, of all places, Epcot Center at Disney World.
Yes.
And so they brought her over here. She met me, and here she is in the United States, not in Morocco. And this is just one example of countless people from all over the world leaving their countries, coming to the United States. It's the most talented people that usually do that.
Exactly. That is one of the problems. The second problem also, that wonderful young people who would be able to fight and change the nature of the regime in their own countries. Instead of doing that, they just emigrate, wash dishes in London or clean streets in the United States. That's also a huge waste of human capital. In my view, immigration became so bad, not because, immigrants come into a country and they disturb local people. That is also obviously a trouble. But besides it, it's even bigger trouble for the country that the immigrants leave, that they go away, and the country has no doctors, has no experts, had no specialists. That's what happened actually in Algeria. When everybody who was able to read and write emigrated to France. And then Algeria went into so much trouble, into so many years of misery, just because all educated people were sucked up into France. Now the French say, why so many Algerians came to France? And we hear their objections, but all so there is an objection from the Algerian side. So, you know, immigration is obviously big trouble for both sides.
Well, that would mean that the people at the Trump rally, the protesters against Trump who go to the Trump rally and hold up the sign that says Muslim doctors save lives, and I've seen them in those t-shirts as well at Trump rallies, are getting it kind of wrong, because really they should be saving lives. The immigrant Muslim doctors maybe should be saving lives in their own countries, especially if they were trained in their own countries.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The country actually speaks about it is Cuba, where President Obama is now. Cubans speak about it on a daily basis. They say that the United States steals the doctors, steals them, the baseball players, because they refer to it as just as some sort of form of theft. They have free education for doctors, but every Cuban doctor, after he graduates, is being tempted by Americans to come over and to work there.
Mm-hmm. So what's the solution, yes, then? Borders would not, what you're saying actually would apply not only to the United States, but really to the whole world. Should there be much, much more impermeable national borders everywhere?
Well, there are different ways of solving it. One of them is to have more or less a similar sort of income all over the world. Look, for instance, at the European Union. In the European Union, there are differences in income, but they're just not very, very big. And you don't see that Portuguese ran away to Sweden to live there, and to me, because though indeed salaries in Sweden are bigger than in Portugal, they are bigger, but they're not so much bigger that the Portuguese will say, let us go into those cold countries and suffer there and earn more money. No, not that bad. So basically, if we succeed to make the differences of income not that vast as they are now, there would be no mass immigration. If we succeed to stop attacks of the West upon the East, if we stop bombardment, shelling, no attacks on those countries, people wouldn't go away. You know, a person who lives in his own modest house in his most comfort. He could live better somewhere else, but he was there. He wouldn't go to America or to France or wherever. So I think that is actually the optimal thing, is less war upon the East, so the people of the East go far away, and obviously to try to make the difference in incomes not as huge as they are now. That probably would be the ideal solution. And until that time, well, something should be done, because all those things are very uncomfortable, and they do exist in Europe too. Like, for instance, I spend usually summer in Sweden, and in Sweden we have always people from Estonia, which is also part of Europe, coming over to work in Sweden. While workers of Sweden come from Sweden because they don't earn money there. And as a result, we...
You know, Israel, I'm sorry, but we're having problems with
in
the reception.
Estonia have no husbands. Yeah. Okay, so they say in so many countries, wives stay lonely and family lives collapse. So obviously we should try to be against it as much as we can.
Okay, well, I will refer the readers to your article on the blessed bigotry of Mr. Trump, which is getting even stronger now with these latest attacks in Belgium. And I will await further articles from you. I appreciate your excellent work. Israel Shamir, keep it up. God bless.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay.
God bless.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.